Minnesota basketball fans, welcome back to the Living in Loserville podcast, Timberwolves and Gophers edition. We were just talking off air. By the way, I'm your host, Chris Carlson. My co-host, Aaron Miller, will be joining us very shortly. Just before we were recording this live here, we were like, oh, wait a second. We can't talk about the Purple People Eaters edition. However, it is the Living in Loserville podcast. We'd like to thank everybody that was listening for Vikings football / Gophers football on the back end with the segment. Really appreciate it. Ever since, early September, we had that thing going on a week-by-week basis. And now we switch, like we said at the end of these podcasts recently, now we switch. We go to basketball, and we're talking Timberwolves and Gophers. That's what we're doing here. And, you know, before we get to any kind of the intro and the ads and all that type of stuff, obviously the Minnesota Gophers just got a key win on the road at Ohio State. My co-host said, hey, that's a sweep. Yeah, that's right. That is a sweep of Ohio State. I wonder when's the last time we did that. But 62-59, the Minnesota Gophers get it done in Buckeye Country. Marcus Carr hits a step-back three, juke two dudes to get it, and they basically just grinded it out to win the game. It was a very, very good game. Didn't get to see all of it, that's for sure, but I got to see some of the most important parts. And, you know, when we talk about the Gophers in the Big Ten, because once in a while we did that during when the Gophers football was on break before their bowl game, we talk a little at the back end of the Vikings podcast about basketball and whatnot. We're definitely going to talk Timberwolves, too. Don't get me wrong. We just figure it's fresh. It literally just happened like 20 minutes ago. So, you know, the big thing is after 10 games, we wanted to be 5-5. I mean, we wanted to be 10-0. But you know what I mean? If we could get to 5-5, we'd be in pretty good shape. The schedule was tough, tougher than it has been anyway. That's going to help us make the tourney. But it just doesn't look good on paper. Our record on paper doesn't necessarily look good. But once you enter the Big Ten, much like Wisconsin, much like a variety of these teams over the years, you know, when they're not even a down year, when they're trying to replace folks, right? We obviously lost two key players last year, seven new guys on the team this year. It's been a little rough to get the glue together. So we're going to get into the Gophers and Timberwolves, no doubt about it. But just to get this W off the bat, you know, right here tonight, that was big. That was big. And the Gophers grinded it out. And Aaron, I'm going to let you hop in here in just a second. Then we'll just, you know, do the normal stuff too like we do. It's just we're coming off a game, so we might as well take advantage of it. The Gophers down by 9 at half. The Big Ten, we know this year has been really, really rough trying to win on the road. Unranked teams at home, you know, have gotten a bundle of wins against ranked teams. And just in general, you know, college basketball, it's tough to win on the road already. But this year in the Big Ten, it's deep. Teams like Illinois, Rutgers, you know, some quality clubs that are better than they have been in recent years. So, at half, kind of in and out of it, thinking, okay, well, hopefully they start fast. And they did. I mean, after, you know, they gave up a dunk, it was 39-28. Marcus Carr hit a three, cut it to 8, and then pretty soon you're pretty much in the game. You're right. It's kind of nip and tuck all the way down the stretch. The Gophers would get up by 1. Ohio State would get up by 2. Then they got – I think they stretched to like – I was listening to the radio like with maybe 8-10 minutes left driving home, and I think they stretched to like 5 tops or something like that. But they found a way to make the ball game close. I think they tied it up 51-51 or tour on a jumper. I think that was that 13-foot jumper. It was a little desperation they talked about. 6:54 left. And like I said, down the stretch, they ended up getting it done, man. So that's a nice win, man. Any road win is big. But like you said off air, you know, we did get the series now with Ohio State, something we can't always say. And it's just a really nice road game, especially, Aaron, you know, losing that Purdue game that when you're up by five with 50 seconds left, you can lose the game, but it better be in another overtime session. You know what I mean? You can't lose the game up by five with 50 seconds left. What was that, double overtime? That one hurt really bad, and Marcus Carr played so great and then fell apart down the stretch. Big win, though. Great win on the road.
Yeah, it was a big win, and like you said, it's so scarce to get road wins in the Big Ten. I mean, you look up and down the Big Ten, and you just see one, teams with one road win, maybe two at the most, and you just, what's different about the Big Ten this year, we don't really know, but it's good to notch up a road win and against a good team. You know, Ohio State came in preseason ranked. We played them the first time they were ranked. It was a big deal that we beat them. And then we go to their place and we beat them. So, you know, like I said earlier off the air, that it seems like this team's rounding into shape. They've had a tough season and a tough schedule. And maybe that's just added a little more grit, because it sure showed tonight in a gritty performance at Ohio State.
Yeah, it really did, man. It really did. And Kessler hit a big three, a couple of them, actually. He's been having issues. We'll get into that a little bit more. Not like he's been an issue. It's just finding everybody's piece and role and putting them all together. But, yeah, big win. Ortura kind of limited tonight, made some big buckets down the stretch. Bakar, 21 points, had 7 rebounds as well, only 2 assists, which is a little – you know, low for him, but he also had a steal. He's, you know, it's crazy. Actually, tell him what you just told me off air about Carr. And if we could have, you know, we did kind of think Marcus Carr was going to be eligible. They had really hoped, it seemed like, because of a coaching change in Pittsburgh, that he was going to be eligible last year.
Yeah, well, I mean, to start out the season, Pitino was pretty sure he'd have him, brought him in on a transfer. And then they went through some clearinghouse deal, and they rejected his playing last season. And then so Pacino's like, well, shit, man, I don't know what I'm going to do here. I don't have a point guard. Let's try it again. So he reapplied. They turned him down again, and so Carr had to sit that entire season. And you start putting the pieces together of what would have been last year's team. You know, you would have had Carr as a point guard, and as you see how he's playing right now, would have really helped to have a point guard like that, especially after Nate Mason had left. And then you go on and you have, you know, Amir could have played the two, a little bit off the ball, could shoot a little bit more, could drive a little bit more, would have opened that up a lot. You would have rebounders, Murphy would have been in there. You had a healthy Eric Curry. You had Kelscher just kind of coming into his own. It would have been a vastly different team with someone to really play the point. I mean, you look at a team last year that didn't have a point guard.
And yeah, we kept saying that over and over again, you know. Man, just need a point guard.
It got to the tournament and won a game. You know, you go with Carr, your record's going to be different. Your seeding's going to be a little bit different. And you might have played a little better against Michigan State. Now, we're going to find out how well we match up again against Michigan State. Last time didn't go so well.
Yeah, right. No doubt about that. And we're going to jump into that. And, you know, I mean, let's be honest. It's 6 in a row losses, a couple of close ones, but the Timberwolves are struggling right now. We're going to get to them, but let's keep it Gophers. But before we do that, if this is your first time listening to the Living in Loserville podcast, like I said, the Timberwolf Gophers edition, it streams live and archives right here on blogtalkradio.com/ropeitoverradio. Streams live, archives, it's basically the headquarters. However, you don't need to just hear it on Blog Talk. That's only, you know what I mean? You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Player FM, iHeartRadio, Stitcher. Did I say Player FM? Tune in a variety of different places. We're also part of the Grueling Truth Sports Podcast Network, which can be found everywhere, including Spotify and iHeartRadio. You can use your Siri or Alexa through TuneIn and Spotify. While you're at it, why don't you head on over to thegruelingtruth.net. That's thegruelingtruth.net. They've got a great sponsor over there, betnow.eu. That's betnow.eu with the promo code TGT. And the Grueling Truth is basketball, it's football, it's baseball, it's boxing, It's everything in between. And real quick, if you're thinking about cutting the cord, or maybe you have and you're not quite happy, you want some sort of cable package, I got something for you. I use it myself. It's called AT&T TV Now. It's live streaming cable. They do have a 7-day free trial. There's no annual contracts to lock you in. And the plans start as low as $50 a month. You can stream it anywhere. They have the cloud DVR. And AT&T TV Now is a growing network. It's not available everywhere. It's available here in Minneapolis, parts of California, Florida, New York, Northwest up in Seattle, Tacoma, more parts in the Midwest, and St. Louis, and Topeka, Kansas. It's kind of all over the place. It's growing. So basically, you just go to the website, put your area code in there, and see if it's available or when it will be available. Because like I said, it is a growing network. It's called AT&T TV Now. It's streaming cable. And like I said, I mean, we're going to get to the Timberwolves. I mean, it's hard to, like, dig out of a hole of a losing streak when you don't have CAC. We all know that. So we'll get to that. Why don't we just kind of hang with this Gophers theme since we started kind of digging into this a little bit. And, you know, we talked about the Ohio State game, the last game at Rutgers. So we had back-to-back games on the road. Got one of them. If we can even do that, Aaron, a one-for-one every time we go out on the road twice, you know, that'll work just fine, dude. That'll be great. But before that Rutgers game, which I did like the way they grinded it out in that game, like I mentioned, it was a tight game. We had a chance to win it somewhat. Rutgers just beat us, no doubt about it. Like you said, it was physical too. But the games before that, Michigan and Penn State at home, you know, Michigan's pretty good. Penn State is better this year. They were actually just ranked before they went on, what, a 2 or 3 game losing streak because their schedule got crazy tough. So, you know, anytime you can win 2 games in a row, it really helps with that 5-5, 4-4. Right now they're 5-4 in the Big Ten. And you look back at that Purdue game, you think, man, they could be 6-3 right now. And, of course, later tonight and in a couple days from now, other teams in the Big Ten will play. But right now, tonight, 6-3, that would put them high in the Big Ten. So they're knocking on the door. I do like that they got some wins together. It seemed like they were kind of back and forth. They were almost 500 in the non-conference. Did end up picking up that Ohio State game, that win, and then they beat Oklahoma State. And they won some non-conference game. And I started seeing them finally gluing together. And like I said, 7 new faces. And even the studs we had back, like I said, Kelscher is still trying to find where he fits, and he's not shooting the 3 like he normally has. And I think that's just him. Maybe he's not getting as many shots up. Just in general, he's just trying to find his spot. He did, like I said, hit some big shots tonight, but it was nice to get up on the schedule a little bit more and get a couple of wins in a row so we're not always fighting for that 500. Now they're sitting at, 11-8, 5-4 in the conference. So they're in good shape. They're right on the bubble already, and a night like this could have bumped them in. 2 weeks ago with those back-to-back wins, they were in as far as bracketology goes. You know, bracketology on ESPN is pretty damn consistent if you look at the last, like, say, 5-6 years. So right now, you know, we'll talk about some games we got coming up, but the last couple of games, win, lose, or, well, no draw in there. But, you know, what have you seen out of this Gopher squad, man? It does seem like they needed to, you know, get it together. They had a lot of pieces, but Arturo and Carr has just been playing out of their mind this year.
Well, that's a good place to start. I mean, you really got a good 1-2 punch with a point guard and a big that can kind of play a 2-man game, pick and roll a lot, and you've been seeing a lot of that. Now, what you said about Kelscher is true. I think Coach asked him a little bit to maybe start to get to the basket a little bit more. It'll open up his 3. And I think maybe he's a little fixated on getting to the basket and maybe should get back a little bit to open up the three. But he's kind of the stretcher. He stretches your defense. And like I told you a little bit off air, I mean, that just allows you to work the two-man game a little bit more with Oturu and Carr in there. And that seems to be working pretty well. I think Demir, if he was had a little bit more, physicality, but he's not. He's definitely not, you know, soft. I just think he's limited athletically, but you don't want to say that because, you know, he does a lot, screening, rebounding, things like that that you want him to do. Maybe not to the extent that Curry would have to kind of help Oturu down on the inside, but I think that, you know, once the Magic starts to work with, you know, the three-man sort of in the starting rotation with Kelscher, Carr, and Oturu, if you can get that to kind of gel to where, you know, you take away the pick and roll, pop out to Kelscher, hits a three if he's on, and then, you know, or you go start with Kelscher and then you start working it inside. You know, it'd be nice to have another wing. I think Peyton Willis is going to mold into that. But like you said, there were seven new faces on this club. So we knew kind of talking a little bit earlier in the season that it was going to be a little touch and go in the beginning, and then they just happened to schedule an extremely tough schedule. So it's kind of trial by fire and learning quickly to get where we are. Now it seems like now everybody's settling into the roles. We could use a little bit more from a bench player, maybe find someone that you can work in a little bit more because the bench has been a little non-existent. But as you see this team sort of come together in gel, you start to see the logic in it. You start to see why things are the way they are. It's looking good. I mean, we're going to face a test here in some of these games coming up that we'll talk about. But where we are now, 5-4 in the Big Ten, is respectable. And for what we were dealing with coming into the season, I think it's a little better than I thought we would be. The non-conference was the non-conference, but they scheduled tough. So, you know, you want to see what happens in this next 5-6 game stretch. I mean, that's going to be the tail of the tape there and whether or not you're going to make the tournament. You got some tough games. A good showing against Michigan State, you got to have that. I haven't seen Illinois play this year, but they're 21 ranked. Wisconsin's going to be tough whether they're good or bad. Rematch with Penn State, and then a tough Iowa team that already got the best of you to start the Big Ten season. So, you know, this next stretch, I haven't seen much Indiana after that, but I'd say, what, the next five games is going to be kind of it. If you can come out with a respectable record out of those five games, you're going to be a tournament team. And then you start to work, you know, towards building the tournament style that you want. But, you know, I just want to quickly say that Carr's really been something. He's better than I thought he was going to be. I thought he would be good, but it really highlights what a point guard can do for a team after seeing last year's product. And, you know, as you level up in point guard, you know, the better the point guard, the better the team.
Yeah, especially experienced point guard down the stretch of the tournament in general. Down the stretch of this regular season in general, like especially tourney time. Yeah, you're right. I was high on him. I had seen him a little bit, but I wouldn't have thought he'd have these numbers right now. I'll tell you that. 16 points, 7 assists. He gets about a steal a game. He even gets 5 boards, which is pretty impressive. He's not like the tallest dude or anything, but he looks like he's like 6'5". Like he's got really long arms, long, lanky dude, and but he's not like crazy explosive. He's not showing signs of, well, he's leaving after this year. You know, that type of thing. That's the thing about college basketball. You want to find great players, but they got to be developed so you can keep them instead of one and done. Not like Minnesota Gophers have a big one and done problem. But even, you know, when you look at Amir Coffey, and, you know, God bless him. Right, God bless him. That's great. He has played in the league, but most of it's been in, you know, the lower the development league, and there's nothing wrong with that. But it just sucks because he didn't get drafted. He didn't get drafted. There's only 2 rounds in the NBA, and if you're not for sure a number one pick, that's the only guaranteed money in the NBA is the first round. And there's been plenty of great players or solid to great players that were deep in the first round. Just ask the Spurs, and in the second round. I mean, there's been plenty of guys that have had solid 5, 7, 10-year careers or were studs, whatever, that were in the second round too. And it just sucks because early in those games, we're starting to figure it out now. But early in those games, at some point, we needed to give the ball to someone and be like, hey, dude, these next 8 minutes, it's you. And obviously, Amir Coffey showed that time and time again. Sure, he didn't have a great outside three. In fact, if he wasn't hitting all those threes to close the year last year in the way he did close the year last year, Aaron, he probably wouldn't have went pro. You know what I mean? So, because it didn't look like that with the, let's say, 6 weeks left that he was going to go pro, you know. But this type, we really need that type of player right now, too, in the beginning of this season. So we're not trying to make excuses. We're not trying to fanboy out. But this stuff does add up. We can't – we're not in just the reload moment right now. We're not at that level. We're not at the Wisconsin level. We're not – we're just not there yet. So we like what we're building. When you look at the squad for the future, when you look at they got two top 100 guys with another roster spot coming back for next year, I mean – they're going to be damn good next year regardless. We'll talk a little bit about that with Arturo because you got Arturo who actually, you know, it's great to see what he's doing, but it also means he's probably going to go pro. And some of these numbers here, I'm going to throw it at you here in a sec, but, you know, this is from a couple of, like 2 games ago maybe, but he was averaging 20 points, 12 boards, almost 3 blocks. I mean, he's right there in the nation as far as, you know, leading in a lot of categories. He has 7 games of 2010, which is tied for the most in the nation and most of the Big Ten. He put a 6-game stretch together this year where he's 26-14, 30-7, 22-10, 19-16, 29-18, 21-20. And the guy's even hitting a three once in a while. Now, he's long gone if he starts hitting threes. That's for sure. Because if he can be a stretch four in the big, or, you know, in the NBA, wow, that's crazy. But, it does feel like he's playing so well that he's playing himself into the league. But Kelcher's sitting there at about just below 33%. And I believe he was 40 plus, next year. So we're definitely going to have to get that up. And also, I like what you said about Demir. Like, a lot of stuff he does is below the basket, but he needs to hit the open jumpers, those three-pointers. He missed one tonight down the stretch. It was wide open. In that Michigan State game, he had problems. In the, was it the Rutgers game? He had problems hitting open shots. So I know he's making the transition from a mid-major to the Big Ten. That's not easy, but it's kind of a one-and-done scenario because he's a fifth-year senior. And then the bench. You know, Amarsa is good. He brings hustle minutes, and that's about it. But we need Trey Williams, the true freshman, 6'5", almost 200 pounds. Kid's got talent. He's shown some lights here. I think he, you know, if we give him the ball and he was on a different team and he got the ball more, he'd probably be showing a lot more for a freshman. But he's in a situation where he's got to kind of find his role. But I think down the stretch, Trey Williams off the bench is going to be key.
Yeah, I mean, we haven't seen a lot of him. And he's definitely needed if we can get a little bench production out of people. But, you know, going back to Daniel, you know, the tournament's going to mean everything to him. I mean, yeah, he's, you know, tearing up the Big Ten, so to speak, but it's not, the bigs in the Big Ten are not like NBA bigs. There's a few that he's gone up against that are probably going to play in the league. But, I mean, once we get in the tournament, if we play a few games in the tournament, you know, he's going to match up with some people that are actually on the NBA radar. And, you know, if he really balls out in the tournament, I just don't think we have a chance of him coming back. But let's say he has a lackluster tournament. Maybe there's a chance he'll come back for that third year. And then you're looking at a squad next year that's just going to be, you know, probably top three, top four Big Ten that we've been waiting for, you know, injuries aside. Every time we line up, the squads for a big run, it gets rattled by injuries. So let's, hope that's not the case.
We're back to knocking on wood, huh?
Right. But then, and the combination of Carr and Arturo, if things work out, it's going to be pretty deadly, especially when you get tournament time and you're doing what you do best, and you're doing it again and again and again, because it's, you know, it's winner go home, and that's a whole different dynamic. And I really think this is going to be a tournament team. I want to say that because it seems like it's building throughout the season. Am I wrong here? I mean, you started off a little shaky, kind of built. You're building up. People are learning their roles, although we wish those roles would expand and include a couple more players, especially coming off the bench. But you're starting to see defensive intensity, kind of what you want to see at this point of the season. And they got a lot of confidence in what they're doing. And a win like tonight kind of just cements that. Like I said, the next game's going to be a good litmus test to kind of see, okay, well, they kicked your butt pretty good on the road. But, again, that was a Big Ten road story. So let's get them in our place and see how we stack up. And, you know, Michigan State, they've got the great point guard, and he is good, Winston. And he kind of straw that stirs the drink there. But other than that, they got the big kid down low who looks like he's probably 35, but he's not. And so
he's got 4 degrees.
Yeah, he's got four degrees. And he's just physically – we don't have anybody physically to match up with him unless Arturo can, you know, kind of try to do that. But that's going to be an issue for us. But, you know, there's ways around that coaching, I think. And, you know, I mean, Kelcher comes out hot and starts nailing threes. Well, that's a whole different story. I mean, that's the good thing about having a player like that. He can get hot and just change a game in a second. Boy, you're probably going to need to do that coming on Sunday, I think. But for now, I think it's right where we kind of thought it would be, if not a little better. And it'll be interesting to see the next five games. And then the stretch at the end is not easy either because it's the Big Ten. And, but, you know, if you line up these next five and then you kind of go into the last five, you know, it starts to look a little better. If you know, look, 500 Big Ten, I think, is going to do it for you, like we've said. And it'll be hard to keep you out of the tournament with a 500 Big Ten record, the schedule that you've played, the players that they might want to showcase. I think that'll get you in the tournament. And that's really all we really said that we thought would be a good season for this club this year.
Yeah. I think that's fair, and down the stretch, we're going to talk a lot about the net rating. We're not going to actually talk about the net rating, but that's actually what you got to stay focused on a little bit out there if you're thinking about, well, man, the schedule or the record doesn't look that good. And are you sure? Don't we have to get to 20 wins and all that? I hear you, man. I hear what you're saying, but just it's just different. We usually don't have we have a pretty mediocre non-conference where we test maybe 3 to 4 games, and then it's usually pretty much easy wins. Not this year. There were tougher games. No, it's not Duke and Michigan State, North Carolina, Kansas non-conference, but it was good for us. So that net rating, long story short, is actually why you see some teams when you're going through the brackets or you're seeing teams on the bubbles all these last couple of years, you go, they have 17 wins. What the hell are they doing in here? And then you look at, oh, well, dude, look who they have to play. So that's why I do feel confident. Right now, though, we'll keep it living in Loserville right now. Get some wood ready. Knock on wood. Michigan State's down 7 at half. I really need them to win in Indiana so they don't get their loss out of the way on the road and then come here to the Twin Cities and be like, all right, guys, well, we can't lose two in a row. Let's get this W. Okay, that's just some fanboy stuff there, though.
No, but on that point, like Coach has said that, you know, you can no longer root against other Big Ten teams because you need, in the net rating, you need them to win so that you can beat them, and that improves your net rating. So, you know, things have changed a lot subtly in college basketball as to how you view a season, how you view a win, how you view a loss, what that means at the end of the season when they're setting up the brackets. So all of that kind of goes in, and he keeps talking about Ken Palm, which I have no idea what that is. Maybe he can tell me. It's just another ranking.
It's like
the
RPI. It's like a more detailed RPI that people trust more now.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's changed a lot in how they view that. I think it's because they're trying to maybe, you know, get some better idea at maybe how to rank the not Power 5. I guess you can't say Power 5 because it's basketball, but you know, the lower tier NCAA teams and how you want to match them up and all that stuff. But whatever they get out of it, I think it's a little bit more fair of a system. We'll see. But it really takes into, like, who you beat, when you beat them, and who they beat and all that stuff. So it seems like it got a little more simple after, you know, out of being more complicated, if that works.
Yeah, it's like quad one, you know, quad two. Like, you got to be in the top 45 or whatever, top 40 in the net to be considered a quad one and a quad two. I mean, it's all quadrants, and I don't have my protractor out or nothing like that. So I don't know, but we do have to pay attention to it, and it is kind of funny. But hey, we like the system this year, don't we? I think it's a good system. I think it's a quality system. And hey, any system that gets us to the tournament, I'm all for. I think it's a quality system. You know, I think.
And I'm always doing. Right, and I'm always a fan of scheduling tough. I mean, it can't, like, you see the benefits of it this year, I think, really, is like, yeah, you're going to take some tough losses in the beginning of the year, but hopefully, you know, you build resolve out of it and you start to see, okay, you know, you're not going to crumble in front of, you know, top tier teams because you've played them. And especially coming down to the end of the season where you're going to need the grit, you're going to need the experience of playing against teams like that, as opposed to, you know, Southwest Missouri State on second week of your season as a win. You know, you go to Oklahoma State, you play neutral site games, you're playing tough opponents, and it builds you for the Big Ten and also, you know, after the Big Ten.
Well, Southwestern Missouri, though, they do have that point guard. Now, yeah, totally. I'm right there with you. And we know the Big Ten. Right now, the Big Ten's the best conference this year right now because the ACC has some weird things going on in it right now. North Carolina is like, who cares about the ACC? Who cares about North Carolina? I'm just saying, look at how close this shit is. So you have Michigan State right now. They're playing a game, like I just mentioned, but they're 6-1 in the Big Ten, right? And I don't know if they played Illinois yet, but they'd be 6-2. The worst they'd be is tied. Even if they lost tonight. So you have Illinois 6-2. You have Iowa 5-3. You have four teams at 5-3. Iowa, Maryland, Rutgers, and Wisconsin, all 5-3. So there's a four-way tie for third place. Then you have Indiana 4-3, who, man, that would be a big win for them. And then you have the Gophers 5-4, Penn State 4-4, and then some teams under there. But what's crazy is you look at the Gophers, 5-4, they're right now, because of the games played, it's really 2.5, but they're 2 games out of the top spot, technically. Now, even if, let's say Michigan State wins, okay, it's 2.5. Like, this shit is crazy deep this year, even more than it has been. And like I mentioned, Illinois, Rutgers, some teams that don't, Indiana's starting to turn the corner, shit, if they got that win tonight. So, so 3 out of the next 5 games. Are at home. So I think the minimum you can do is 2-3, but you'd sure love 3-2. And being that we're 5-4, if you could go 3-2 above 500 at that point, now you're notched up 2 games ahead of 500, which, like we said off air, is it's nice, because then if you lose one, you're not like, oh God, we have to win this next one. Otherwise, we're going to go under 500 and all that crap. And that's a tough way. We were playing that game last year so much until they had that winning streak. But anything else you'd like to talk about our Golden Gophers before we get into this? What a great reason to call the show Living in Loserville, Timberwolves?
No, I mean, we did have the Jeff Teague trade, so let's just work into that a little bit. I heard some rumors that it had something to do with Cat. We talked a little bit off air. We don't really know anything about that. I don't have much more than that. He was dissatisfied with Teague in some way or another. This is a rumor I heard, so I think I didn't know what to think of it, so I asked you about it. You didn't know much about it either. And we both thought, you know, that Teague would be traded. Maybe it was a little quicker or maybe a little bit more expedient than they would have liked if that was the case. But I want to kind of ask you and kind of pick your brain about the team doesn't really have a direction. Like, we're not looking at another rebuild publicly, but it kind of looks like that, you know, if you know what you're seeing in the team The Rosas came out and said that everybody's available but Towns, and that Towns isn't available, so stop calling. And, you know, and everybody's just calling for Towns anyway. It may be Covington or whatever, but... And so I'm wondering, are we being sold a rebuild as you know, a team trying hard and, you know, not winning? Or are we kind of, do they think they can fix something here? Where's Wiggins' status? It's just kind of all a mystery this year as to what the direction is, and they won't really say anything. And I guess what I'm getting from it, to make a long story short, is a hidden rebuild, man. Like, they're going to probably tear it down without saying they're going to tear it down. And then maybe collect some picks, get some trades for young players, and maybe surprise us with a trade here or there, maybe a player we didn't suspect, and then come into next season with a young team built around Towns, ready to, you know, throw their lot in the Western Conference. Because I don't see a status quo getting us any more than where we are in, again, a tough Western Conference and even a tough division.
Well, Let's talk about Teague first. We knew Teague didn't fit. Not only the new way that people are playing basketball, but especially the way we're going to play basketball. And the way we're going to play basketball as the Timberwolves, I'm cool with it because I do think Wiggins and Towns should be playing modern-day basketball. And they even under Sam Mitchell, they did way better than they did in the old form under Tibbs. You know, I get all that. One thing I'll say, though, is, you know, if the shit ain't dropping, don't take 42 threes. I don't care what you did in Houston. Well, first of all, you had shooters in Houston. Maybe a handful of years ago they did. And I understand that. I like the different direction we're going. It's definitely going to fit Towns way better. But I'm still on the hold on now. If the fucking ball's not falling, don't keep shooting threes this game. I don't want to see 13 of 42. I just don't. I think it's ridiculous. And when people always go harken back to the mid-range jumper or that right on the elbow and how that percentage shot is actually just as good, if not worse, than a three, so take more threes. I understand the analytics. And I understand Houston was, you know, on the forefront of those analytics. However, before we talk about 80s and 90s basketball being trash, wasn't it the Houston Rockets that missed 17? Or no, it was more than that. It was a bunch of threes in a row in the conference finals, game six. It was game seven. They missed so many threes in a row, and you can't tell me that that's a good thing. You know what I mean? You just can't say, like, I understand, like, a lot of these dudes now will be like, man, I was watching the throwback 90s game, and, dude, it was hard to even watch because the shot selection and all that. Okay, yeah, but just jacking up threes, so those are good shots? How many fast break threes do we need? You're telling me within 8 or 6 feet of the rim is a better shot than three on a transition? I'm not talking about
it. Just don't get me started on this, man. I mean,
right? But here,
who the hell is telling you that? Because that is fucking ridiculous. Like,
well, that's what analytics.
We run two plays in the NBA now. The NBA now is pick and roll and transition and pop a three. They don't run offenses anymore. They don't do anything like that anymore. Don't get me started on this. But whoever was saying that they're disgusted with 80s, 90s basketball.
It's the analytics guys. It's the blogger boys. Because they have this measurement. They have this measurement of right before the three-point line, not quite a mid-range, but before it and back at behind it. And you might, because it's that extra point, you might as well take that shot. And I understand that to an extent. I do understand what they're saying. You're going to take more threes. I get that. But, you know, when you've missed, and I just checked the stat, 27 in a row, you can't tell me that a mid-range jumper wouldn't help there. You know what I mean? You go fake the three since they know you're going to take a three, then go to the, you know. That's
well, I'm convinced – I'm convinced it's because they can't shoot him anymore. Do you remember back in the day, and I hate saying that, but you, when a guy threw up a mid-range jumper, you assumed it was going in. Like, right. They were shooters, they were basketball players, and I'm not going to go down this back in my day thing, but man, the NBA today is almost unwatchable due to the fact that they've totally caved to how players play. Like, they don't, it's not, how do I say this correctly? Like, you're not playing basketball. You're not popping out for the mid-range jumper. There's no screens. Everything's pick and roll, three-point shots. There's no real artistry anymore. It's just athletes that can jump and are tall, running down the court and dunking or shooting threes. Now, that's obviously oversimplified. But what happened to the nuance of emotion offense or things like that? Now, the only reason I can think why that's not being run anymore is because it can't be comprehended. And that is a problem with the sport itself. So when you tell me that the Timberwolves and you, this ridiculous stat you had about the three-point shot, yeah, stop taking it. You know, come in, take two steps in if you can make that shot. Two's better than zero. Three might be better than two, but two is better than zero.
Well, and you got to be – and I just sent you – it's going to blow your fucking mind. But I just sent you something. Look at the shot, the top 200 shots – from 2001 to 2002 to 2019-20, basically a 20-year stretch. Look at the top 200 shot locations, and that really puts it in perspective. You're either run rimming or you know, rim running, I mean, or hitting the three. And you know, it's a thing of beauty at times. So many different types of basketball can be a thing of beauty. But my thing is, for the people that say the 90s basketball sucked, okay, because you're watching it now differently. Okay, cool, but let's look at this, though. How many fucking times do you watch a game and they miss threes for about five straight minutes of game time? And it's just three, 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 three. And a lot of it's open break. And let's be honest. The rite of passage, the contact rule has obviously changed the game majorly, too, for scoring. Right now, scoring is way up. And so the way they call the plays allowed them to go, okay, well, now we're going to be able to drive more, or we're going to be able to kick now more too. And instead of bringing a three-pointer off the bench or having that one dude, you know, chill in the corner, it's a couple dudes chilling in the corner. The problem is, 2 years ago when we had Wiggins chilling in the on the corner, you know, like that's not how it works. So my thing is, it's like, that's cool. I understand where the game's going, but fundamentals are fundamentals. And if you fucking miss 27 shots in a row from a spot, don't fucking take that shot for the rest of the game for a little bit, or not the rest of the game, but you know, try something else basically. And I've kind of gone long winded. I apologize for that, but
no.
That really shows you.
Well, what I'm seeing really sticks out is the baseline. There is nothing coming from the baseline nowadays. And back then, it was just as dark as any point except for right under the basket. And that just tells me the skill of shooting is gone. There is no more shooting in the NBA because it's a skill. And if you don't have the skill, okay, so let's just follow this down quickly.
3 and D. That's what it's gonna do. Can you play defense? Can you hit a three? Okay, you're on the squad.
Now go take that back a step further to one and done. Players not staying and developing in college, not working on the game. So then you get this 19-year-old, 20-year-old player who might not be a Kevin Garnett or a Kobe Bryant, who hasn't had to develop, like you said, the fundamentals that it takes to play in the NBA. So you've got these underdeveloped players joining your professional league, and with the changes in contact and stuff, which I'm not a huge fan of, you've got this now a game of two sectors, right? Three-point shots right under the basket, and nothing in the inside at all.
Like, and the elbow. Look at the elbow. Look at how many shots are taken from the elbows, both sides. It's like, wow, there's not even an elbow shot. Like you said, there's no baseline. It's crazy.
And I think that due to, like, the offense, the players not being able to take those shots. Also, you probably have to say that for all the great things that David Stern did for the NBA, and they are, and I'm sorry that he passed on a week or so ago, but you know, he could have been stronger against the Players Association. I think a lot of that has to do with the kind of deals the players got and what really gets valued in the NBA. And we're seeing it very well laid out, excuse me, in this graphic of what's valued in this. It's three-point shots and dunks, and it's just right there in front of your face. And I'm really glad you sent me that because it just explains all the arguments I've had with people about what's happened to the NBA and how it's almost unwatchable.
And feeding the big, too. Feeding the bigs. There's no bigs to feed, so what are you going to feed? You know what I mean? There's nothing there. So there's nothing to catch on the elbow. There's nothing to catch on the baseline. Like, so, yeah, I mean, it you can balance it out, and you can still make it look pretty, but you can say that in the 80s, 90s, and well into the 2000s. It doesn't have to be everybody plays this style or you're screwed, but the way it's going, it does feel that way. But let's so basically Alan what the hell's his name? Crabtree, we'll call him. He's a shooter. He can shoot. He can shoot his ass off. He's getting too much money for what he does. The team trade, going back to that real quick. It does open up a roster spot, which does tell me they're going to make another move. It sounds like from local media and everybody that said they're going to make another move, and that's why I think Covington's in there. If it's D'Angelo Russell, well, then, yeah, you're going to have to give up Covington. I think or a guy like that. I don't know if it's Russell or whoever. Yeah, the Teague thing, there was a shot a while ago of Teague dribbling, right? And Towns is open at the three, and he smacks his hand like, here you go, here you go. He smacks his hand, and Teague's there dribbling, and then he just goes to the rack. And it's like, dude, he's wide open. What are you doing? Where are you going? And the whole dribble it down to the end of the shot clock, then we'll figure something out. And he hesitates with the threes, and he just doesn't. He's a solid player. Nothing wrong with Teague, but he's not a good fit. So either we're going to get cap money out of this if old boy doesn't sign here, or let's say this guy can shoot, and then maybe in the offseason we can have more money to spend on other stuff or to keep players that we, you know, get, whether it's Russell or whatever. But also just cap room, and maybe this guy fits in. He's got plenty of time to try to fit in. Maybe he fits in as a great three-point threat, and that's great. You know, so I like the trade. You know, like we said, we figured Teague was going to be gone. Didn't quite know. We didn't think we'd get the world for him. And he goes back to Atlanta. Kind of funny how he went back to Atlanta where he had all, you know, his major success. So good for him, you know what I mean? But it does sound like the trade deadline, which is mid-February, that they're going to do something. And a couple of things that stand out, Wiggins is playing really close to his contract, which is great news for us spending money on him yearly if we want to keep him here, or down the line trading him. And then Gorgui Dieng, with 15 games or whatever it was that Cat missed, when Towns was out, Gorgui really looked great. He's always been better when he starts than come off the bench, if you look at it, but maybe we can actually trade him this year. I don't know if that's possible because of his contract, but for sure next year, I think he can be a minor role play commodity. So I think some of the interior improvement we needed to make that we talked about last season, I think they've made. I don't know how they got Wiggins more consistent, but they sure have. And then obviously Teague going tells us something about Culliver. And Culliver has been playing pretty damn good. He needed the ball. There was a point where he went 9 straight games with double digits, and over that, I think, nine games, he was averaging 15 points. He's coming around in the assist, category as well. So, I mean, he's a player that's going to develop into something. We got him, you know, for this year and 3 more years. So, I mean, he's got plenty of time to develop. But, yeah, there was a last seven – well, it was before this one. This was the old stat, but 7 games – for 7 games straight, he averaged 17 points, shot 39% from 3, and had some assists in there, too. So Covington's been solid as well. But to go back to your main point, and that's what I love about this podcast and you and I talking sports, you asked me a question, what is this? Is this a on the low rebuild? And I think that is potentially what it could be. But my thing is right now, it's really hard to judge when Cat missed 15 games. Those 15 games that he missed, we're just not going to get anywhere without him. So it's hard to – maybe that point made him go, well, dude, maybe we should start thinking about some stuff, because if we don't make the playoffs this year, then we should make some moves and see if we can improve the team. Or, like you said, gather some picks, and then maybe we can move up in the first round, late in the first round next year. I don't know. But it's really hard to judge. Yeah, they started out really well. Then they went through a minor funk, and then Cat got hurt, and that funk – got just extra smelly, right? It was just real funky, dude. It was like 70s funk. And then it was like a long losing streak. Then they kind of got their shit together minorly. I think it was like 4-2 or 5-3, something like that. It was like, okay, here we go. Wiggins is back. Yeah, okay, we're doing good. Okay. And then now we've lost, I think, 6 in a row again. So crazy thing is we're not – that far out of the eighth spot. We're definitely further now that we've lost 7 in a row, but we're not as far as you think. But the time is now. The next month, they need to make a run where they win 6-4, 7-3, 5-5, 6-4. You know what I mean? They really have to put together above 500 runs. And when you look up, you know, the NBA team, there's always that last 10 games. We need some 6-4s going our way in 7-3s.
Well, just not – I don't want to be a heretic, but there's a couple questions I got out of what you just said. And the first question, I think, the overarching question is, if you are in low-key rebuild, and is Cat the appropriate centerpiece for that? Now, we talked a little bit off-air about Cat's demeanor. He's a defensive liability. He doesn't play effort on defense. Now, offensively, the guy is improving day-to-day, game-to-game. But defensively, it's just not there. We had a player, Kevin Garnett, who was a defensive-first player who also scored. So we got spoiled, and that's kind of been our archetype for the star player with the Wolves. Cat's just not that, and I think we're at the point where we know he's not going to be that. So you got to find some sort of defensive force, a big that can you can set next to him. Covington was supposed to be that, and at times he is, but he's not that as consistently as you would have to be. I'm talking about someone who could be maybe a straight-up real center, you know, back to the basket, big body, rebounder, defensive player that can you know, also move on the break. And, you know, swinging back again to that point is
– that sounds like a first-round pick. No, I'm
just kidding. Right, yeah. So now we talk about this skeleton, right? So we got a skeleton of players. You're on this low-key rebuild hypothetically. I mean, what I can see there is four players. I can see Cat, Wig, Culver, and Okogie as being your skeleton for this new iteration under Rosas. And, I mean, those are all good players.
Put Cub in there because of the 3-D.
Sure, but I really think, like, you're right. I think they're going to move him. But, yeah, let's say if he's still on the squad, yeah, he's definitely in that skeleton. So, 5 if you don't trade Covington. Now, if they're going for D'Angelo Russell and you give up Cub for that, then you've got 5 players there in that. But then you got to build around it with other players. And it's hard to imagine what those players would be, but I really think that now that we know what Cat is 5 years in, I think, at 4 maybe, but I think 5, you need a defensive big next to him that can also run, but you need a guy that's going to hold down defensively so that Cat can be allowed to offensively do what he does. I mean, I really think Cat's a 4, maybe like a tweener between a 3 and a 4 offensively. And so you need a kind of tweener between a 4 and a 5 to match with him, no matter what style you play, because just defensively, Cat's not going to stick his nose in there unless he's playing the guy from Philadelphia. He'll be defensive.
Right, right.
But also, we saw in the playoffs last year what they did to Cat in a situation where he had to play some defense, and he just wasn't willing to do that. And so I think really the first question being, and I'd like you to address, is Cat the centerpiece to build around? Two, if he isn't, what do you propose to do about it? And then three, what do you think about the players remaining that you would also build around, assuming that we are in a rebuild process?
Well, I mean, the thing is, for me, when you lose, I mean, how many games have they had? You know what I mean? Like, how many games have they? What's their record right now? I don't even want to look at the record, but 15-29, okay? So, you know, that's about 40 games, right? So 39 games. Now, if 15 of them, and I guess you can include the game or two that he got hurt out of a game. No, I think he got hurt in a game and then just didn't. I think he stayed in the game and then they, pretty sure he played the rest of that game. I don't know. But either way, my point is, I gotta admit, it's hard to judge that type of stuff when your star player was gone for what amounts to damn near the half the season. So we have this new system. We have some new role players, which I like and I'll get to, and I can definitely answer your question. It's just tough to put a wrap on it or tie it up with a bow right now, in general, because I need to see more of this. Even him and Covington together really didn't play that many games together, you know, so I got to see more of it. But as far as, you know, I like Lehman. I do like Lehman. And early on, he looked pretty damn good. He can come off the bench. He can start. He can do whatever you need for him. Just a good role player. He's been hurt ever since. I think he's been out for a while. Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at it right now. He's only played 16 games. Not that he's the glue that we'd be in the playoffs if we had him. I'm not saying that. But as far as role player, keeping him around on a low contract, too, that's key, too. Napier as a backup point guard, sure. I like him. I love Okogie. I like Reed, too, because he's cheap. I like Diop. I do like these role players. I like some of these role players, actually. I do. But we haven't seen it all together to even, for sure, you know, have anything concrete, I'd say. But Okogie scares me because I'm not seeing the improvement from his three yet. So I'm a little shaky that way. But man, the guy, considering he's not like, hey, let's bring offense off the bench, the guy can just make things happen in a game. And so I think you're right as far as that skeleton. As far as Towns, though, talking about Towns, now, I don't think he'll ever be a hard-nosed defender. I think he got it right on the nose there. Now, has he been making improvements? Sure. Sure, he has. Are they enough to consider him, you know, ready to go on that side? No. No. Still only averaging one block. And sometimes if you're guarding, I don't know, sometimes block don't mean a lot because if you're guarding a tough guy, you're not going to block his shot a bunch. I mean, KG never got a bunch of blocks until they put him at, you know, as a center and as a true big when he got the Celtics. But he got blocks, but when you're going against the best guy, you're not going to block Kobe's shot much in the night. You know what I mean? But I think the style of play that's in the NBA, I definitely think you still go with Towns. And there are other star players that are not strong defensively. I've seen enough improvement in it where I think if you, like you said, line some people around them, if Culliver can keep improving on defense, which we think he can, if they can keep the same energy out of Wiggins somehow, he's not bad defensively. His whole game, you just didn't know what would show up. Covington, obviously a stud on defense, and he's a deep, you know, 3-and-D guy. But I've seen some improvements, but yeah, still out of Towns. He chases blocks when he shouldn't. He gives up easy fucking layups that way. That kills me. He'll chase a shooter, and you're like, dude, but you just left your big, you know, down low for an easy bucket. And also the demeanor of, and he's not the only guy in the NBA that does that. We all know that. But when you're running, okay, you missed a shot, you got fouled. Great. Run down the fucking court and wait for the whistle to blow. It's basketball. A whistle's coming right around the corner. Then lay into the fucking ref. You don't need to lay into the ref before running down. And that's my problem with him. He's always complaining and always like, dude, what the? And this is coming from a podcast that adores Kevin Garnett. You don't think KG didn't complain? Of course KG complained, but he did it at the right time. The first and foremost was going on in the play and in the action. That's what KG was tied to, and then the rest will come out. So when we talk about demeanor, dude, KG's demeanor, a lot of people didn't like him until they, you know, I talked to some Celtics fans, and they're like, man, I didn't like his ass, but once we got him on the squad, man, dude, I love that dude. You know what I mean? Like, now I understand what you're talking about. And so we're not talking about demeanor like you can't complain or you can't show some, you know, energy and all that, but the way he does it is so, like, millennial. The way he does it is so kicking rocks. I'm kicking rocks over here. It's not going my way. And, dude, just get down the fucking court. You know, that type of thing. I guess that's – so, yes, I believe in Towns. I actually do see enough minor improvement defensively. I think what you said, if you can continue to develop and bring in players that can play defense, he won't be a complete vulnerability like he is. But like you said 2 years ago, once we get in the playoffs, then that's a whole different other beast. But I suppose let's get in the playoffs. But I would, and here's why. Because no matter when, Aaron, you can trade Towns no matter when. He's already shown how good he is. He's averaging 26-10 right now with 4 assists, a steal, and a block. He could be traded 2 years from now, tomorrow, 5, you know what I mean? So you got him under contract. You might as well, you got him to sign the dotted line to for 5 years. You might as well make him your centerpiece. And then you can always trade his ass. If you're like, man, we developed it now. Now if we could get a good player and then another good player, 2-for-1, you know, we could always trade him, is my point.
Well, I mean, and just a dovetail off what you said about Towns needs to realize that if you're going to dress down a referee for not making a call, you're damn sure he's going to dress you down when you want a foul call. I mean, get off their backs and they're going to help you out. But if you're calling them out and not giving them a chance to make a call and continually calling them out, yeah, they're going to be like, fuck that guy. Yeah, you got hit in the mouth. Good. I wanted to do it. You know, fucking the other guy did it. They'll get down the court and play some defense. You know, some of that just might be he doesn't want to run down the court. He'd rather sit and complain and not get back on defense. Meanwhile, we got a fast break going the other way. No one stops the ball, and that's the way it goes. And you know, how much of me believes that every single NBA squad is complaining about lack of defense? I mean, it is a league-wide thing where no one is playing defense. And if there is a team that's playing defense, they've got a great record in the regular season. Then when they turn it up, and everybody plays defense somewhat in the playoffs, well, then it changes all the things, and you get the upsets and all that because, hey, no one told me these guys were going to play defense. They haven't played, you know. It's a league-wide problem, and going back to a little bit we were talking about before, at some point we've got to look at the NBA and say, is it a scam? Are we being scammed here? Because no one's playing defense. We're taking 2 shots, layups, dunks, or 3-point shots. You're taking players 1 year out of college, on down the line with this question. I don't want to get into a big thing about it. But what exact product are we buying here from the NBA? Nobody plays defense. It's getting to a point where the NBA needs to really...
I don't think no one plays defense.
Maybe a young player trying to prove themselves, but once they become an all-star, well, I won't say that because all-stars tend to play defense, but I'll say those mid-journeyman guys on a team.
There's teams that play it well, there's teams that don't.
I hear your point, and I agree with you. But think back to, I don't know, Bulls era. Pistons were a whole different thing. There's no question about their defense, but just kind of compare the ball defense that we're seeing, yeah, you have difference in contact and you can't put your hand on somebody. Well, then you know what? If it's hurting your product, let them put their hands on somebody.
But see, it's not hurting
their
product. It's
just the way it goes.
It's not hurting their product, though, because they want more. Every league wants more scoring. You know, hockey wants more scoring. You think baseball, the reason why baseball don't give a shit about, that's why they bought the ball company, because they made the ball go pop off the bat more. We all know it did. It's just
Well, then I gotta be this old codger sitting on my Rocker telling you to get off my lawn at this point because I want to see more defense. I mean, that's part of the game. You know, if I could make two changes quickly, I would change the free agency, in, particularly in basketball, and I would somehow try to – I think all of that would help defense. I mean, it just – if you can make one move and get to the basket and you can get away with pick and roll all day, I mean, what is that? I mean, what coaching is that? What is that? It just don't. You can't stop a pick and roll when the whole freaking league is doing it. I don't understand that, and I'm done with my rant, but it just.
Well, I mean, not only that, but it's much like college basketball in a different way. You gotta watch best versus best too. That helps in the NBA, best versus best, because then you'll see the best product. You can't just watch some random game, and a lot of times we do watch a random game, and that random game, unfortunately, is our Minnesota Timberwolves. We're seeing bad basketball, and it adds up when we play other bad teams. But if you look at like a team like Philly, you look at like a team like Boston, you look at what the Lakers will be in a couple of months at the end of it, Toronto last year, Utah is a very good defensive team, so I think it has to do with the rule changes too. We have to say that because you can't put hands on people, so that does change up the whole thing. But they're happy with their product. Let's put it that way. This whole ratings are down thing. Let me see. Golden State doesn't have Steph Curry, and they get a lot of national televised games. Right? Nobody's gonna watch that fucking game. And then Zion Williams, they gave him. New Orleans, a bunch of, you know, of course, because they got the rookie. They put him on primetime. Well, he just played his first game yesterday. So that hurts your ratings, because who the hell is going to watch the Hornets. That's showing the age. Who's going to watch the Pelicans, New Orleans, without his ass? And I'll say this, they actually are playing pretty good. But last night, he went off for like 17 straight points. I don't know if you saw that. It was nice to see Zion back. Definitely need him in the league, but yeah, man, it's changed. The rules have changed. The coaching has changed. Like I said, you have to watch best versus best to really get out some stuff where you're like, ah, because otherwise, like you said, then it'll just be, well, the playoffs, I'll watch the playoffs intently, you know, because then you do get, like you said, that layer of intensity that you didn't have in the schedule. These back-to-back, four games and six nights back-to-backs, it's just too much, dude. It's too much. You can see the dead legs, too. I think that they're actually talking about shrinking the season by about four or five games and trying not to do back-to-backs. There's a lot that goes into it. But anyway, we are long. Is there anything else that you'd like to tie a bow on this puppy, sir?
No, I will concede the point that we are watching bad basketball with the Timberwolves. I mean, I do watch some other games, and I'm annoyed with the same thing. But you do have a point with just the level of basketball that we've seen, with the exception of maybe, you know, four or five out of the 30 years that we've had this club. And, you know, it just seems to be more of the same. But let's go on, and maybe we get this low-key rebuild, and maybe something right comes out of it.
There we have it. The low-key rebuild. I like that. That just has a chime to it. All right. Well, that was a good variety of stuff there. We'll be back next week to talk Gophers and Timberwolves basketball here on the Living Loser But podcast. Like you said, we appreciate all the football listeners and hope, you know, some of you guys like the brown ball that's round as well. Anyway, we're going to get out of here. Enjoy the week. We got some crucial games coming up in general for the Gophers. And like I said, the Wolves just need to dig out. Once they dig out, then we can kind of see, okay, where are we at now? We're what, four games, five games out? What are we at? Can we get that eighth spot? And then try to compete. The least we could do is compete for an eighth spot. I mean, it's so wide open if you look at about five or six teams. It was, especially, you know, before this six-game winning streak that or losing streak that we just got on. Anyway, I'm going to get out of here. You guys have a good one. We'll be back. Go Minnesota sports, huh? Peace.